May it please the court, my name is Dan Goldberg and I represent Philip Fields in this appeal. The government has conceded that Mr. Fields' conviction for Missouri reckless assault falls squarely within this court's holdings in Asana, Don, and Boose. That holding states that, quote, statutes that encompass reckless driving that results in a serious injury is not a crime of violence under the force clause, end quote. This concession by the government is dispositive because this panel only needs to apply that line of case law that's well established. The government in its brief, I think, does an excellent job of trying to fight uphill battle to state that Asana, Don, and Boose has been overruled. But I think when this court applies simple rules of jurisprudence, you see that no court has overruled that trio of cases. Let's turn first to the Fogg case. Of course, that's a panel opinion that was handed down by this court last year. And we know for two reasons that Fogg did not overrule Asana, Don, and Boose. The first reason is that it was analyzing a distinct issue. Of course, it was Minnesota drive-by shooting. And that panel issued a common sense, plausible approach to that, that shooting at a building involves violent physical force. But the government, I think, attempts to extract too much from that holding.
Well, I can extract quite a lot from footnote 4 in Voisin.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, and I think that's a great
All we
point.
Say is that Leocal's exclusion of accidental conduct from the definition hinging on use of force is in no way inconsistent with our inclusion of reckless conduct in a similarly worded provision. That, to me, seriously undermines the Asana line of cases. If construed as broadly, Asana, I remember, was an Arizona statute that turned on that specific statute.
It's interesting.
I'm remembering it wrong. So forget about controlling precedent. What's wrong with Fogg's interpretation of what I just read from Voisin?
Well, it's interesting because I think we have. I think it's a great point. I think that note 4 is the bedrock of why Asana, Don, and Boose are good case law. And I planned on quoting this. In footnote 4, the Supreme Court says, our decision today concerning section 921, which of course is the Misdemeanor Domestic Violence Act, that's a different statute than what we're analyzing today. Scope does not resolve whether a crime of violence includes reckless behavior. Courts have sometimes given those statutory definitions divergent readings in light of differences in their context and purposes, and we do not foreclose that possibility with respect to the required mental states. So I think Voisin has expressly reserved the issue, and I think that's critical to understand because if the Supreme Court's reserved the issue, it can't be read to overrule Asana, Don, and Boose. It hasn't gotten there yet, and I think that's what you need to overrule Asana, Don, and Boose as an intervening Supreme Court case. And that just hasn't happened yet. Turning back to Fogg, though, I think the other important issue about Fogg and Asana, Don, and Boose is that they can peacefully coexist. There's not an inherent tension. What we need to do in applying the force clause is look at the crime on a case-by-case basis. Has there been violent physical force? And again, I think Fogg reaches its result, which is a plausible common sense approach, and Asana, Don, and Boose reaches another conclusion in a different context, and there's not any tension. But let's just say this panel finds that there is. I think the other reason why we know Fogg hasn't overruled Asana, Don, and Boose is because it didn't state it was overruling any cases. And in this court, the Eighth Circuit's not shy in stating when it's overruling its prior case law. The other reason why Fogg didn't overrule Asana, Don, and Boose is because the government's conceded that one panel opinion may not overrule another panel opinion, of course, unless you engage the en banc procedures for rehearing. And that's the government's other alternative here. If they don't like Asana, Don, and Boose, they can file a petition for rehearing. But absent that, I think Asana, Don, and Boose are governing authority. The final reason why Fogg hasn't overruled Asana, Don, and Boose is, of course, if there is an inter-circuit split of authority, I don't think there is one, Asana, Don, and Boose governs because they came first, pursuant to this court's rule that the prior case law governs. And I think another reason why Asana, Don, and Goose governs is that it's had broad support from this court. Several judges have signed off on one or more of those opinions. And just last year, the Garcia-Longoria case said, at least in some cases, recklessness does not satisfy the crime of violence. So I think the government's entire case hangs on Boisin. And for some reasons I've already discussed, Boisin just doesn't answer that question because it's an entirely different statute of the Misdemeanor Domestic Violence Act. And the government's entire argument hangs on Boisin. The problem is that you have to go back further in time to understand the Supreme Court's case law that disposes of this issue. And that starts at Johnson 1 in 2010. Johnson 1 says it has to...
We've heard all that.
Sure.
Let me ask you, does any case hold that Mathis applies to guidelines crime of violence issues after Beckles?
That's a fair question, Your Honor. And I'm thinking... I guess I don't know why it wouldn't. I think
Not Mathis isn't going to be retroactive, but does it even... But when Beckles says, you know, forget Johnson, you're using the guidelines. How? Why is Mathis applicable? Because if we get to the modified categorical approach here, I think you're in trouble.
Right, if Mathis doesn't apply, right?
Yeah.
But I think Mathis does apply, and I'll tell you why. The terms crime of violence and violent felonies have always been thought of as interchangeable. The case law applies, and what we'd be doing is we'd have two totally different ways of analyzing the case law, and I think it would be causing quite a mess in our current thinking of how we interpret those two terms. So they're virtually identical. I think the Eighth Circuit has repeatedly held. So the more I think about it, I don't know why Mathis wouldn't apply. I think the government's conceded it's applied in this appeal, and in fact, we made an objection for the trial court, district court, saying you can't consider the facts, and the district court actually sustained that objection. So I don't think those facts are even in evidence. So for all those reasons, and I think the other reason why Boisin doesn't help the government here is that if this court were to re-decide Asano, Boosin, and Don, I think it would reach the same result. And the government's argument is that basically there's no difference between misdemeanor plate throwing in the kitchen and a drive-by shooting and a felony. But of course there's a difference. I mean, these are categorically different crimes, and district courts throughout the nation have held that the government's argument that they've repeated throughout the nation is a, quote, comical misfit. And the reason why it's a comical misfit is because, again, going back to the force clause, you have to see if violent force has been used. And they just have.
So hitting a victim in the head with a bottle and stabbing him with a butcher knife is far less violent than what was at issue in Boisin?
Fair point, Your Honor. Of course, we can't get to those facts.
I don't know what would be in the Shepherd authorized documents if we could use the modified categorical approach. I think I'm taking facts, or the government's taking facts from the PSR.
Again, I don't think you can do that. Again, we objected, and the Asano, Don, and Booth says statutes that encompass reckless driving that results in serious injury. That's Missouri case law. That's section 565.060.166.
All right. Also, if we get to the modified categorical approach, and there is something in a document we can consider that recites that those were the basis for the conviction here, that's a crime of violence.
I disagree that you can get to those specific facts
But you don't know what was in the charging documents or the plea colloquy instructions, or do you? I don't think that's in the, it's not in the brief.
The only thing that matters underneath the modified categorical analysis is what's the specific subsection of conviction. Nothing more. That's it. Full stop.
Well, DeCamp, maybe, Mathis, sure, but not pre-DeCamp.
And that all applies. I don't see any reason why this camps and
because all of this analysis was based on fear of Apprendi and Booker, and that constitutional problem that doesn't exist when you're in the guidelines.
And I would go back to my same point, is that crime of violence, violent felony, are interchangeable. I think the Eighth Circuit has held that.
My contrary on that one, which you probably are aware of, their rather stupid limitation of burglary to residential burglary, the Supreme Court said otherwise.
Fair enough, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good, thank you. Ms. Dunning?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Allison Denning, and I represent the government. I was the attorney that handled the prosecution of this case. However, I was not at the sentencing. I've reviewed the sentencing transcript, of course, and the conversation there was fairly straightforward. As the government has indicated in its brief, the government clearly believes that the defendant's prior conviction under the Missouri second-degree assault section, subsection 3 of the statute that's been cited by opposing counsel today, is a crime of violence under the guidelines. And the government did not concede that the prior precedent in Osana, Don, and Booth somehow settles the issue. Clearly, the issue and the argument by the government is that Voisin effectively overruled the reasoning and in those each of those cases. And that fog...
Effectively overruled. It didn't overrule it expressly or literally or fairly construed. It casts significant doubt.
That's a fair statement. The government...
Okay, and fog doesn't. I mean, fog just sort of opens the door to the traditional Taylor-Shepard analysis of this statute, right?
Well, I think what fog does is it recognizes...
Those cases don't categorically make this crime a crime of violence. If the state statute is construed by the state Supreme Court, wouldn't take us there under Taylor and Shepard. Doesn't that have to be right?
If the particular statutes involve reckless driving resulting in injury?
No, this statute.
This statute is recklessly causes serious physical injury to another person. And there are only two elements to this statute. There's actually a case that's cited by both parties in their briefs. But
how is recklessly construed by the Missouri courts? Does it include reckless negligent driving, DWI?
Reckless, it is separate. And the cases that were cited by Mr. Fields in his brief regarding the stating that the Missouri courts have somehow interchanged those to mens rea are not persuasive. The cases are each cited, I think in each of those cases, they are considering two different convictions. And so if in a manslaughter conviction, the requirement was negligence, and in the assault conviction, it was reckless. And so there are some quotes from those cases
but
cited.
But you're not talking categorical analysis. You're not talking Taylor, Shepard, DeCamp, Mathis. You don't talk those. Don't tell me Fogg overruled Osana and I win.
Well,
that doesn't work.
The government's position is that this particular statute is divisible. The parties agree on that, and it's clear from prior Eighth Circuit rulings.
Okay, but is sub 3 divisible?
No, there are two...
I got the right one.
You have the right one. There are two elements to this. Arriando, the Western District Court of Appeals case from Missouri, tells us there are two elements. One is that the person recklessly causes, and two, substantial physical injury to another person. And with those being the two elements, the government believes that if we are to apply the reasoning of Mathis, that the means of how you recklessly cause that injury is irrelevant. It's unimportant. So these prior cases that talk about reckless conduct.
But how do the state courts define reckless in this statute? Do they define it in the way that Voisin, the criminal recklessness, which of course we apply all the time in our deliberate indifference inquiries under Section 1983, as defined by the Supreme Court, I think in Farmer versus Brennan, which is cited in Voisin. Is that the way the Missouri courts limit the definition, the element of reckless here?
Yes.
What's this Missouri Supreme Court decision to tell me that?
I'm not aware of the Missouri Supreme Court. I'm dealing with the cases that were cited by the parties and the statutory
What's
definition.
What's your best case for that proposition?
Each of the cases that were cited in the briefs.
Is there a case that says negligent conduct does not violate this subsection?
The government believes that each of the three cases that we've covered in response, the Morrison, Arellano, and there's a the first case is there's Morrison, there's Arellano, and there's a third case that both parties cite. It's the Riondo case.
Well, under Missouri, can you be convicted for reckless driving of this statute?
Without a doubt.
Okay, so reckless driving is encompassed. So then your theory, reckless driving is a crime of violence?
Yes.
But the Supreme Court said drunk driving's not.
Well, I think that if you look at the statute in this case, there is actually a separate subsection that deals with operating motor vehicle under the influence.
Intuitively, when I was practicing law, which admittedly was many, many years ago, our goal was always to get a drunk driving pled down to a reckless driving. So you were saying, you know, that's not, intuitively, that just doesn't make sense, as I guess. I'm not saying it's not legally correct, but intuitively, I've always thought that drunk driving was a much more serious offense than reckless driving.
And that may have to do with sort of a societal look at that. But I think the mistake would be to assume that if this statute criminalizes reckless driving resulting in injury, that must mean drunk driving resulting in injury. And it may be used by prosecutors in that vein. However, that's not what's required by the statute. So, in other words, one of the cases that was discussed by the Missouri Appellate Courts talked about the defendant was complaining that he'd already been convicted in municipal court for a driving on the wrong side of the road.
You think Boisin overruled Begay?
I don't believe that's the case. I think what Boisin said was that the reckless was sufficient for a use of force. And so I'm not making that position, Your Honor.
Why? Of course, that was Missouri felony DWI, which required third time.
Well,
it was not sufficiently intentional.
Bottom line
in the game.
And I believe that analysis in terms of whether or not reckless driving is similar in kind to other cases under the residual clause,
the statute in Begay had said reckless, then the decision would have gone the other way.
Well, I can't presume,
you think that's what the court was telling us in Boisin?
I think what Boisin was doing was examining the use of force clause and a similarly worded clause to force clause under the ACCA as Fogg eventually recognized. But this term of use of force, that the use can be reckless, is what Voisin was considering. And I think that when you then look at this particular statute in light of other cases and the requirement of violent force, I think that the court could easily hold that this particular offense under subsection 3 does require the kind of violent force that is discussed in those other cases. And that is because, for one thing, substantial physical injury is required. So with that sort of causation element of the statute, the government would believe that there's inferred in that in order to cause serious physical injury, the phrase is serious, that implies the use of significant violent force or requisite, I guess I should say. Additionally, as I stated, the fact that it requires only those two elements, recklessly causing and then the serious physical injury to another person, the means of how that is being done, whether it's by a car or whether it's by a gun or whether it's by throwing the plate, that's part of the analysis of the government, that if you do a modified approach and it's true that reckless mens rea is sufficient to be a use of force, then under the statute, that's why Voisin had such an impact on the reasoning of the O'Donnell, Don, and Boos cases, because they...
I'm not following you. Are you saying we can get into the facts?
No.
Okay, we can't. So it makes no difference if it's serious physical injury that results from reckless driving, throwing a plate, or hitting a person over the head with a bat and shooting them.
Right. And so under that...
And if we disagree and therefore... modified categorical approach, do you agree that it's foreclosed by Mathis? Concede, I should say.
Well, I don't. I think that Mathis actually supports the government's reasoning in this case because the modified categorical.
Well, it doesn't. Not if 0.1 paren 3 is not itself divisible. 0.13 includes reckless driving, which is considered to be following OSANA, not intentional use of force. If that's then therefore the question is, but some crimes clearly involve reckless use of force, like this one, and the charging documents. Plea documents make that clear, but Mathis doesn't let us get there, or does it?
I don't
believe it's a guidelines case.
Right.
You haven't briefed the argument.
I have not. Okay. Your Honor, I see that my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Goldberg, no, I think your time is up. The argument has been good. We've gone through this issue and multiple permutations, so we'll take this one under advisement.